commemorate the actual launching of the ship.
So right now we have Leland Yee on the line. Hello, Leland.
Hey, Roland. How you doing?
There we go. And then Ranish has come in.
Oh, hi, Ranish.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Oh, hi. This is Rima.
Rima, how you doing? Everybody's there, huh?
Yes. We have Al Williams here, too.
Hey, so, Al.
Leland, how are you?
Good.
Good, good.
Want to thank you from the top about supporting this...
The slavery, the exodus from San Francisco. We're planning a commemoration, Leland, and really want to thank you for sending a representative from your office over to our meeting yesterday, Leah. And I spoke to her again today. She's going to be at our meeting tomorrow, where we're planning to commemorate the exodus of several hundred African Americans from San Francisco to British Columbia, Victoria, British Columbia, back in 1858. It's the 150th anniversary, so we really appreciate you're coming forward and sending a representative from your office forward to support us in this very important commemorative event.
Well, it was really my pleasure and honor to participate. Unfortunately, I couldn't do it directly, and I was busy here in Sacramento, but wanted my staff to be there to convey my support. There's a lot of commonality between what happened to the Chinese and what happened to the African American. So many of the Chinese were also discriminated against and told them that they don't belong and that they need to go back. And it's a sad part of California history, and it's important for our children and future generations to just remember that this happened so that it never happens again.
Hi, Mr. Leland. This is Ranisha speaking.
Hi there.
I was wondering if you can elaborate a little bit more about the Chinese Exclusion Act for us.
Well, what happened during those years was that, as you know, racism and discrimination comes out in its ugly form, particularly when the competition is so sharp. And in the 1800s, everybody was trying to what mine gold, and there were all kinds of economic opportunities. However, the Chinese were discriminated against because they ended up competing with the whites on a number of different areas in business, and one of the easy way to get rid of that competition was to suggest that these individuals were doing things to hurt the economy, hurt the business, hurt the environment, you name it. And so there were a number of exclusionary laws, all the way from not accepting any more Chinese in here, to not allowing one to bring their wives here, others to just simply prevent them from conducting their business here in California, not educating their children. And so those were the laws that were actually passed, not only by local government, but also by state government. And the African Americans, the same thing, that you would just simply deny them the opportunity to make a living, to earn a living, and it was just horrific.
Okay, my next question is, well, we've kind of discussed about the continuing effects of slavery, and after going through so many years of turmoil and hatred, and we can see all the different effects evident within our society today. So I was wondering, do you see any continuing effects from the Chinese Exclusion Act within the Chinese society today?
Oh, absolutely. The fact that we have Chinatowns is a classic example of why and how Chinese were, in fact, discriminated against. They were only allowed to live in certain sections of the city. They were, could not move outside. Their schools, their homes, and so on were limited into certain areas. They could never mix with the white kids in terms of going to school. They couldn't do business outside of the Chinatown area. And so these Chinatowns and so on, while some of us may take some pride, is a remnant of the discrimination and the racism that happened in early California time.
So, yeah, I have another question. Well, I noticed that we often hear a lot about, you know, the effects of slavery and everything that's been going on, but I haven't really heard too much about the Chinese Exclusion Act. Why do you think that is?
Well, unfortunately, I think some group of individuals would rather not talk about things, not bring up some of the horrible things that have happened to them in the past, either because they're embarrassed or they're a little ashamed of it. So there have been, historically, efforts to just simply erase history and not to think about it, not to be reminded of it. But I take a different stance on that, and that is that racism and discrimination is unfortunately part of one's human nature. And we've always got to be vigilant that these things never happen again. And one of the best ways of doing that is to remember some of our forefathers and foremothers who suffered tremendously under these conditions. And to the extent that we do that and to remember that, then we've got a better handle in terms of preventing it from happening. And so, unfortunately, I think some people would rather not remember and think about it, but I, for one, need to think about it and remember it so that we don't allow this ever to happen again.
Well, Leland, you were a teacher in the past, and Ranisha and Rima were talking about what you tell Leland what you were thinking about the school system and stuff. Maybe this parlays into what he was just saying.
The last show we talked about like the different inequalities in the school system and like the different issues as students that we feel should be addressed and aren't being addressed really, or aren't being taken care of. Maybe they're being addressed, but not. I haven't seen any action being done. But we talked about like how like low funding and like the different credentials of new teachers and why there are so high retention rates in low-income schools versus, you know, schools who have a lot more money. And what else did we talk about, Rima?
We also talked about how unfair the system was with, like, having to travel about 30 miles to go to another school when you could get a better education than to go to a school that's in your community. And we talked about, I believe, the transportation. But we had got a letter from Roland, I believe, about all the days that they have the history and that it wasn't acknowledged, and that us as teenagers, we're not aware of what happened in our future. And I believe, honestly, that you don't know where you come from unless you know your past. So they had, like, Susan B. Anthony days, and we don't usually celebrate that, so...
Well, I absolutely agree that we must remember our past, and I think part of what I try to do is to not accept the fact that some kids cannot learn and that we cannot wait until tomorrow to fix these particular problems. And I was on the Board of Education back in the 80s, and you know, it's interesting that back then they were saying that some kids were having problems learning, and still we hear that refrain that some kids are still not learning. And I think all of us as adults and others, you need to have this resolve that, you know, we're not going to accept that anymore. We're not going to accept another 2 years, 3 years, 4 years of improvement in order that finally kids are going to learn. We've got to say to all of ourselves and others that we've got to take care of this problem right now. We cannot lose another child. We cannot lose another generation of kids who are not doing well in school. And the only way that I think we're going to do that is, you know, the money is important, and we need more money. But beyond that, we've got to just take this resolve that it is totally unacceptable that one more semester that there are kids who are not going to do well in school. And I think if we have that particular mindset of not accepting anything less than excellent for our children and live by that and work like that, then I think we're going to be able to help a lot of kids in our school system.
Oh, this is Ranisha speaking. My next question, well, I've lived with my grandmother, and like constantly I'd hear her say, well, school is just not like it used to, it's just not like it used to. And I've heard you say that you were, I think, a part of the Board of Education in the 80s. So I was wondering, like, do you see the change within the educational system? Did you see the change, or do you see a change, or?
Oh, I definitely have seen quite a bit of change. You know, it's a lower class size. I think the curriculum is a lot better than it used to be. I think that there's a greater understanding and acceptance of kids who are not doing well and finding strategies to help them. So I think it's a lot better. You know, your grandmother's right. You know, it's not what it used to be. But it will never be what it used to be, because the challenges of any youngsters going to school, growing up in a society right now, are far different than what it used to be. The trials and tribulations, the difficulty of just living life these days are so hard. And so, you know, it is a lot more challenging time. With that said, however, you know, all of us have got to be resolute in the fact that, you know, kids are going to make it, and that we're not going to accept any failure. And if there's any youngster who's going to fail, we're going to find out a lot sooner, and we're going to help that youngster before that youngster fail. And I think that that is kind of a commitment that we all have got to make, not only for ourselves, but for everybody.
Hi, Leland. This is David Kordsmeyer. I had a comment. Do you think we're setting up some of our kids to fail because some kids don't fit into standardized education?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think that one of the best instructional strategy is having individualized instruction. We do that for special ed kids. They have what we call an IEP. I think that every single youngster in a school district should have an individual learning plan that tailors a educational program to that particular youngster's interest and skill level, so that everyone is on track to being an excellent student. I think the problem is that we throw out a curriculum that is generic. We throw out a curriculum that supposedly everybody is going to understand, accept, and that's just not the case. And we've got to individualize the instruction. We do it for special ed kids. I think we can do it for regular ed kids. We should do it for all kids, regardless of their background, because every youngster deserves the very finest of instruction. And having an instructional program that's tailor-made to that individual's needs and wants and desires, and all of them, moving all of them towards excellence, is the way in which we should have our public schools set up.
Well, this is Ronisha speaking again. Well, I just recently found it interesting, because I've kind of been doing some research on the achievement gap between African Americans and Latinos, and the studies say that African Americans are testing way lower and performing way lower in schools than Asian and white kids. And I was wondering, like, I thought it was very interesting that, you know, we have so many similarities, like slavery and African Americans with slavery and the Chinese people with the Chinese Exclusion Act. And I was wondering, what are your thoughts with the achievement gap, and why do you think, like, there's such a big gap between African Americans and?
Well, I think that part of the difficulty that you know, we're finding in some segments of our community is the disintegration of the family unit. And what we've got to do is to help everyone in our communities to regain that support unit. You know, one of the realities of life is that you know once you leave school, you know, your learning doesn't stop. You got to go home. You got to study. You got to get help with your study. And who best to do that except for your parents? But if your parents are out there, if you're a single parent, that is even more difficult. But if your parents are out there working hard, working, you know, 10, 15 hours, you know, it's just hard to, you know, help your child. And providing that strong family unit is extremely important. Providing a safe community is extremely important. So there's a whole host of, you know, issues that we've got to address. But I think what's going on now is that people have pretty much thrown up their hand. You know, it used to be that if one child dies, if one adult dies, the entire city would go crazy. Now, in San Francisco, when one person dies, you hear in the news and they say, well, what else is new? That is just so outrageous to me that we are not having absolute democracy. demonstrations in the street. How dare we allow in San Francisco one more person to die because of violence? That is not acceptable to me. We should not tolerate that. We should not accept that. We should cease to do anything but to find an answer. Until we find an answer, we should not, in fact, think that this is business as usual.
Leland, this is Al Williams. I certainly agree with what you just said. The thought occurs to me, though, is that when we talk about the response to that person dying or those persons dying in the street, we, Roland and I and some others, were involved recently in getting the city to adopt a year ago to adopt a slavery disclosure ordinance here in San Francisco, and a part of that was to begin to look at the question of slavery and its continuing effects. And it seems to us, at least at a certain level, a lot of the problems that exist today, particularly as it relates to the African-American community, are the continuing effects of slavery. And the primary effect is the economic impact that was never addressed when slavery was resolved. So now you have the prison industrial complex that is being created, and the high level of arrest and incarceration of black males that contributes to the breakdown of the black family. So it seems that until something is done around this question of reparations, and I know that with regards to the Chinese in Canada, at least, they had reparations around the head tax that was passed there. Until something is done around that issue to level the economic playing field, it seems that it's going to be hard to address these underlying kind of issues or these symptoms of that underlying continuing effects of slavery. And I wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I signed that petition, that ballot measure, voted for that ballot measure on reparation. I think that what we've got to do is to address some of these fundamental problems, because as a psychologist, I know that if you don't deal with some of the fundamental problems, you're dealing with the symptoms, and the problems will still be there. So I absolutely agree with you on that.
Well, this is Ranisha speaking again. I was just wondering, well, how Mr. Al Williams and his organization are, like, trying to pass ordinances, you know, for after the continuing effects of slavery. I was wondering, do you know any Chinese organizations, or are you a part of any organizations that are, you know, trying to, I guess, better the Chinese Exclusion Act?
Well, I think all of us, sort of deal with this problem on a daily basis. I think all of us understand that, we need to continue to strive so that we achieve. Every day is, in fact, a struggle, and the day that, we rest is the day when we die. So every day we have to work hard, every day we struggle and continue to compete and do well, and I think that's unfortunately the message for all of us. So we can never, never rest, and we need to continue to strive.
Cool. So what I'd like to do is thank Leland for the interview, but also I want to give him some information about Ranisha and Rima. I believe you guys are got accepted to school, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And what's your goals? That because I know you want to. Somebody wants to do journalism. Somebody was working the polls and on and on. What's happening with you guys?
Well, this is Ranisha speaking. Well, I just recently got into some state colleges, and I want to pursue journalism, radio, like news broadcast, something to do with journalism.
And what about you, Rima?
I was accepted into Tennessee State University. I mean, Texas Southern University, and Benedict College. And I really don't know. I want to do a lot. I want to be able to make a difference in my my community. So basically, I really don't know. I wanted to do architecture so I could come back here and build houses that minorities or people who are less fortunate could afford, and basically be able to teach my community so it wouldn't end up as nothing.
So Leland, as a man of color and an educator, what do you think about?
Well, you know, the future is bright with those two young ladies, and I just hope that they will never ever forget those dreams and continue to work hard. All right.
We want to thank you so much for letting us interview.
I enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.